Welcome back to Everything Fraser Coast. I'm Jussie Lindeberg, your host. And as I travel around the Fraser Coast, I come across the most amazing places, but especially the most amazing and positive people doing extraordinary things in our own community. So a few years ago, I actually came across the name of Arkosh, and he's a local artist. And I reached out to him a while back and didn't give up though, pursued him and managed to actually get him into my studio today to share a bit of his story. How are you going, Arkosh?
Hello.
Hey, and you don't really have a clue what we're talking about today. So I've sort of tried to not ask you too many questions because I'd really like to unravel the Arkosh story through the podcast and be on a bit of an adventure of discovery with you. So are you comfortable?
Yeah, I'm very comfortable. Thank you.
That's good. You're the most reclined podcast studio visitor I've ever had, actually. So you really? Do look very relaxed. It makes me feel like I should have a long couch in here and you could put your feet up. And tell me everything, Arkosh.
Yeah, you got me in the first second. I can see that. Yeah, I usually do that. So, yeah, actually, when we opened the gallery and we had the first meeting at the Fraser Coast Gallery, we invited the artists who were interested in exhibiting in that gallery, and they put chairs everywhere. And my chair was garden, how do you call it in English? Well, what you use at the beaches and...
Like a sunbed or a deck
sunbed.
Chair.
Yeah, I put a sunbed there. Everyone's sat on a chair, you know, like... It was actually, looked like a construction site. It was empty, big building, you know, concrete down, concrete up, everything, nothing were there.
Yes.
And it was the first meeting set up, talking about the space and what we want to do with the space, and there were the chairs, and I was it's uncomfortable. My chair was like this at the first place, and I put there that sunbed, and I was like, okay, this is good.
Yeah, life's
we can start the meeting.
Life is too short to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you've just mentioned about the art gallery, and you're a local artist, but I know that you're bigger than just a local artist in the art world. But before we talk about that, can you give everybody a little bit of a background of who you are, where you come from, and your journey here, how you ended up at the Fraser Coast?
Yes, so I'm a full-time artist, and I have always been an artist, and that has been my job in my whole life. So I've never done anything else. My education was... you know, at the finest, like, European art schools and art universities. Not just one. So when I was a teenager, I started at an art high school. So in Hungary, there was a special art high school where students can get an entrance with an entrance exam. And you don't pay for, in Hungary, you don't pay for schools. And you don't pay for universities. There are some paid universities as well, but the universities with the big, with the great reputation, they are all free, but there are entrance exams. So they are not interested in your money. They are interested in your talent and what you can do. Okay. And in that art high school, the out of 1,000 students, no, it was not 1,000, it was 1,500, yeah, because it was 15 times more people who wanted to enter the school, and only 100 get in. And so you go to the entrance exam, and if you do everything on the entrance exam high points and high level, you can get in the university, because there is a limit, you know. So it's they start with 100 students every year, and even if there are 200 absolutely crazy, trying talented students in that 1,500, only just 100 gets in. Okay. So if you are talented, maybe you are not lucky. You are as much as talented as the 100 who gets in that year, but you might try the next year. Okay. It was a high school where if you get in when you are 14, so it's the age of 14 when you can first go to the entrance exam. You have to be 14 at least. All of my classmates, because I got in when I was 14, all my classmates were different ages. So even there were in the first grade, which are usually 14 years old, there are 18 years old kids in the same class. So that's why I just emphasize that that's how important is the skill when you can get in such a university or such a high school. And this was just the high school. And the university was even worse, you know. The entrance exam was 1 week. No, it was two entrance exams. The first round was 2 days. And the second round was 1 week. Every day go there 8 o'clock till 5 o'clock and do the entrance exam 5 days. It was incredibly exhausting and very, very tough. And out of, I don't know how many thousands, 2,000, 3,000, only 100 gets in every year at that university. And at that university and at the high school, the interesting thing is that in high school here and in Europe as well, the teachers in high school, they are different. They had different degrees than the university university lecturers. Yeah. Am I right? So that's a different thing, being a teacher and a university lecturer. And it is the same in Hungary as well, except this art high school. So at the art high school, the art teachers, they all got the same skill and the same degree as the university professors of other art university. So basically, sometimes I got the same professor I got at the university I got in the high school.
Oh, that's pretty
good. Just totally different thing. For instance, he taught first, I'm talking about Sunyogi, Professor Sunyogi. I don't know how to pronounce it in English, but Sunyogi is the pronunciation. He's a worldwide famous art professor, and he is the most important artistic anatomy professor in the world. So his books translated to, I don't know, 80 languages. All around the world, and you can find his books in every serious art university's curriculum of art, artistic anatomy. And he was my artistic anatomy professor at the university, and he was my drawing teacher at the art high school. The same person, you know what I mean? So,
yes.
We received the same serious education at the high school.
Yes.
As at university, but of course in a teenager's level, you know. So
envious of your education. It seems that it's all around the skill and the talent of the student, rather than, like you say, you've got to pay. It's about bums on seats in universities and that sort of thing. It's a different mindset. Is that a common thread through the hungry youth of your generation? Were they also hungry to pursue their different study with other specialized fields?
Exactly. So that is the point. So if you want to be a lawyer, you have to go to the legal university. Well, how do you call it in English?
Law school.
Where the lawyers? Law school.
Yeah.
Not law school, law university.
Yeah.
It's a university stuff. And that's one of the toughest universities in Europe, the law universities. You have to do the entrance exam. No exceptions. And there is a little gap. So, for instance, there is 100 students who get in. Out of that 100, 90 gets in for free, and even with scholarship. Okay, so not they pay, the government pays them to study there, because they are the most talented lawyer kids,
yes.
lawyer students, and the 10%. So 10 people, 10 students are picked out of the unsuccessful candidates, the top of the unsuccessful. So
yes,
90 gets in, and that is 10 on the top from the list, and they are offered that, okay, you can get in, but you have to pay.
Yes.
Do you choose? Do you want to come?
Yeah.
But you have to pay, or you can try next year.
Yes.
You might be in the 90. And some of them, they pick it. Okay, I want to get in. I don't care. I pay. Because I'm lucky that I'm in,
yes,
at least in the
10. The offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some of them, I'm very confident. No. I'm going to try it. I don't have that much money or whatever. I'm going to try it next year. So it is like that. So there are some who pays, but these are the conditions. And these are the conditions with the art university as well. So 10%, which is 10 people, picked and asked.
So how old were you when you finished university?
Oh, it was, I was 28, and it was 5 years, the final one, But before that, I went to other semesters because it was the Hungarian University of Fine Art. But I went to, for instance, in Barcelona. It was called, it was in Spanish language, Barcelona, and it was University of Spain of Design and Art, or something like this, yes. Translated in English. And I did some semesters there as well, because I was interested in industrial design as well, and this kind of stuff.
When you first came to Australia, was it as a holiday, or did you intentionally relocate?
I wanted to move from Hungary, from Europe, not from Hungary, because yeah. Because now it is Europe, so it's easy to move in Europe from Hungary because there are no borders and you can just yep. decide, okay, I want to live in Italy or Germany or whatever. Yes. You can find a job and you can move there. But I wanted to move out of Europe 7 years. It was my plan actually 10 years ago, but we needed 3 years to, you know, to establish that and, you know, to be prepared. And we were basically, when we were thinking where to go, where to move, try something. It was like there are candidates of countries, you know.
Yes.
Must be English-speaking country.
Ah, your criteria.
Criterias. Must be English-speaking because I was interested in English. And, you know, in Hungary, it's almost impossible to learn a foreign language if you want to learn it from school or something or teachers or whatever, unless if it is a native speaker or something. But even if it is a native speaker, if you don't use it every day, yeah. you basically cannot, you have to, when you speak another language, it is like you think English. So it's not like I think Hungarian and translate it and talk English. No, that's impossible. That's not working. Obviously, you start like that, but it's not working. You have to think English. Yes. So I'm thinking English right now. That's how I can talk fluently with a strange pronunciation. But
no, it's a very nice pronunciation. You've got a nice fluently. Accent. So you're obviously married.
Yes.
And is your what's your wife's name?
Catalin.
So did you meet Catalin in Hungary?
Yes. We've been together for 17 years.
Oh, lovely. And so you immigrated to Australia. So Australia was the country that...
Like criterias and okay, America, not bad, but it's not good either. Must be something warm country with beaches because I was sick and tired of that European, middle European, weather. It is, oh my God, it's killing me.
Can be a bit oppressive.
yeah, that's too. So, you know, artists are son and daughters of the sun. So we want light. We want sunlight. We want always light. We don't like the nights. We don't like dark. Okay, sometimes dark is good when you want to be romantic, but no, we want to see. We are visuals. We want to see. We don't want to see dark, you know, because dark is just without any colors.
Yeah.
You don't see any colors. And for an artist, you need to see colors. And 6 months in Middle Europe is without basically sun. No sun. There is the sun, so there is daylight, but... always clouds. It is dark and gray. Everything is gray. Without sun, everything is gray. If there is the and here in Australia, the sun is always there. And even in Melbourne, which I hated to be there, but compared to Europe, I loved being there.
Yeah.
You know, in Melbourne because yeah. it was a big change. But the weather was crazy in Melbourne. We started in Melbourne.
Right. Okay. So did you come to the Fraser?
I told you I have many stories.
No, it's awesome. And I'm trying to get you to when you get to the Fraser Coast. I'm dying to know, how did you end up here?
Oh, so funny. So the thing is, so we are not economical immigrants. Okay. We had a good life in Hungary. If you mean good life, you have money and you can make living and things, you know. Hungary is an European country. It is in the top 5% of the world, richest country with the highest GDP. So if we have problems like, oh my God, I cannot buy a new car or something, oh, don't be ridiculous. You are in the top 5% of the world.
Yes.
Don't be positive. This is the positive.
Yes.
Podcast and be positive. Think about the rest of the world, the 95%, the other 90, and between the 5% and the 95% is a big gap. So it is not like it's a fading, you know. No, it's the 5%, big gap, and 95% on the bottom. You know, that is the thing. So we are not an economical immigrants. I was sick and tired of the weather. I didn't like that Europe is incredibly busy. You know, people are everywhere, literally everywhere. You cannot see the stars during the night. You can't. No matter where you go in Europe, because the light pollution is so strong. Cities everywhere, you know. And even if you are in the middle of the forest, but there is somewhere around, not too far, a city with big lights all during the night, and it's polluting the sky. Do you know the word light pollution? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here in Australia, no, there is no light pollution. Even in Melbourne, when it's during the night, you go a little bit border, suburb? Mm-hmm. There is the sky and there is the stars and you can see the stars. It's amazing. And that was the thing in my first month in Australia. In Melbourne, I went to the beach and I was lying on the sand and I was just observing. Because I haven't seen it before.
Akash is sort of laying back on the chair looking up at the pretend sky, my ceiling fan.
Yeah, it is. It is like that. So, yeah. So that's how, just to know, to understand, because you are an Australian and even you are a Fraser Coast. Are you a local? So you born here?
No, I was born in Brisbane and I've lived in Brisbane. I grew up on the Gold Coast. I've lived in Sydney. I've lived in Mackay and I've lived overseas.
Oh, so, really? Yeah, okay.
So I've been around a little bit.
And in Europe, yeah. So do you know what I'm talking about?
I am. I do understand what you're talking about very clearly. So
okay,
you're just trying not to put my view
across. It is another thing to understand it, and it is another thing to really know it. What I'm talking, you know, and you know because you were there. So it is like that.
Well, there's even a similar in Europe. What I found was, well, particularly in Austria, all the buildings are painted yellow. So right down to the architecture, there's a uniformity through.
In Europe. Yeah, it is for the protection of the old buildings. So that's the other thing. So in Europe, everything is old. So it is, we don't think that's old. So in Budapest, I lived a normal flat, everyday flat. It was 200 years old. And do you think that I thought it's historical or something? Or I was like, a 200 years old building here is a world heritage or something, or a historical heritage. Or there, people just live there, you know, everywhere, because you can't find younger buildings there. Okay, you can find out of the city, very, very out, very, very out suburb. I don't know, from the CBD, I don't know, 50, 100 kilometers from the CBD. Because Budapest is a huge city, you know. Same size like Melbourne, and not on size, but population. So it is same like Sydney and Melbourne. The population is the same, but in a smaller area, because we don't have much space in Europe, you know.
Yes.
High buildings. So here in Australia, the CBD has the big skyscrapers and the suburbs where the people live. And in Budapest, you cannot live in a small house. I mean, in a one stair house. No, that is, you cannot find it. Only 100 kilometers away from the CBD. Every building is, even the 200, 300, 400 years old buildings are at least 5 stairs, 6 stairs high. And
you mean floors?
Floors.
Yeah.
Sorry,
not
floors.
Steps.
Yeah. That's the Australian floors.
Yeah.
Not stairs.
Yeah.
Floors. Yeah. So floors, and because they are old buildings, the height of the rooms are 5-6 meters. So it is not like this here.
Yeah, so it's massive.
You have 2.5 here.
Yeah, so it's grand.
Three times, at least 2 or 3 times taller, higher than.
I bet you miss that.
I lived in a flat that.
I bet you miss the high ceilings. Do you miss the high ceiling?
Basically not when I sleep, not really.
Yeah.
Why would you need a big air there?
So I have to find out. So you came to Australia, to Melbourne.
Oh, sorry.
And yeah. How
I always go there. That's why I warned you. I always go there, here, and
tell me, what was it that about the Fraser Coast that you ended up here?
Okay, so we started in Melbourne because for to come here we needed a visa, and my wife was interested in learning, studying a new profession. And he loved the hairdressing school in Melbourne. It's a very, very famous hairdressing school, worldwide famous hairdressing academy, Biba Hairdressing Academy. They have, you know, star, superstar hairdressers around the world. So who learned, who studied in that academy. So it's a very, with a high reputation, very expensive. And she picked that because she's a maximalist. Perfectionist, you know. Yeah, and she worked, she's an artist as well, she worked as a makeup artist with me, and not with me, in Hungary, and not like a simple makeup artist, she worked in the high fashion industry. She even won international makeup prizes.
Wow.
In London, in New York, and so she got a high reputation as a makeup artist there. But so again, we were well established there, what we were doing, but we hated the whole atmosphere of Europe, the weather, especially the weather. When we moved here in Melbourne, we picked Australia because of the weather. Nice people are here, not many people are here, and very far from Europe. That's good, and it's perfect. Seemed perfect country, and I still think it is perfect. And we moved to Melbourne. I didn't want to move to Melbourne. My original plan was Queensland, because I studied Australia, and even the Wikipedia knows that Melbourne weather is very strange. And I saw that, I don't like this. It sounds very bad, but maybe, okay, this is Australia, try it. Okay, because she wanted that school. Okay, so we moved to Melbourne. And also my wife used to be a city girl. She's a real Budapest, London, New York girl. You know, she don't know what is a goose or a pig or whatever, this kind of stuff. No, she's just a real good, real city girl to the core.
Yes.
Okay, and she didn't want to hear about moving like regional areas. No matter where it is, Australia, whatever. No. I need a city. I need a big shopping centers. I need many people and friends and models and fashion and this guy. You know, high fashion industry. She was like that. And we went to Melbourne. First, I loved it because it was very different than Europe. So even Melbourne, the busiest city, I believe, in Australia and craziest city in Australia, compared to Europe, is, I don't know, is the sitting Buddha statue, you know, meditating Buddha statue, compared to an the European city. And but I got used to it, and I saw behind the scenes during the 3 years we spent there. She finished the school. She was working like she was interested in hairdressing again in the high fashion part. Okay? Yeah. But she had to work in the hardcore industry as well to make money. It was an accident we moved here.
Wasn't expecting
because
you to say
we got, I mean, she got a job opportunity from here. Okay? And with that job opportunity, because it not was just a simple job, a visa opportunity. Because we had just a working study visa, which is, I don't know, it's a temporary visa. And we got that opportunity. Okay, move there. She didn't want to. But the visa is a very, very attractive thing, you know.
Yes.
And she forced herself. When we moved here, she was crying for 2 weeks. And now she loves it. And now she doesn't want to move. And she doesn't want to move even to Brisbane. Okay, so she likes that it is calm. It is nice. Always good weather, the beach, the people are nicer, slow, the whole thing is slower
so
and relaxed,
yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. And in the first months and in the first half year, had some trips, quick trips to Brisbane, you know, for her, you know, a little shopping center, a little, I don't know, cosmetical stuff and something. She found a way that, hey, Akos, there is a cosmetical shop or whatever in Brisbane you cannot find here in Harvey Bay. But they were just excuses to go to Brisbane. This shoe I cannot buy here. We need to go to. But honey, we can just order it and they just send it. You know, there is a very great invention like post office. You know, did you know that? She was like, no, 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 I want to try it. And I'm like, okay, let's
she
go.
She just needs a
quick
city
trip.
Fix.
Yeah, 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 city. And now she just told me, oh, I don't want to go to Brisbane. It's too busy, too exhausting. I don't like it. Too many cars. Well, and now we are here, you know.
Right.
Slowly changed.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, that's so nice.
So this is the story. And we are here. But it was good. So, for instance, I had some mural jobs in Melbourne. And there is a good one. The Biba Hairdressing Academy. It was again a thing that they approached me with this mural job, and it turned out a very good job because they gave me sort of a free hand. They told me what they want, but sort of a free hand in style and this kind of stuff. And they were talking about art history as well, and they pointed at the Art Nouveau historical art style, and I love that, and I included that in the so I had the opportunity to include some art history in that piece, and it turned out 30 meters long and 8 meters high. Mm-hmm. Mural, big mural on the front of the building in the busy street in Fitzroy in Melbourne, and now that mural, it is on the must see list in Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
Visiting list.
Yes.
Oh, now it is there.
Yes, and it's
and itself, the mural is in several books, I mean tourist books in Melbourne, without my knowledge. Sometimes I just see things on internet that here is a book and there is a book and it's my mural is there, you know.
So do you mostly do murals?
Oh, I started murals here in Australia. You know, I'm a fine artist, as I told you, and you know, in Europe, you don't have much chance to do murals because there are old historical buildings, and you cannot just paint on a Baroque or a Romantic building, you know, or
yes.
What is that, a classical building? You cannot. There is no even space there to paint because there are the ornaments and everything. So, and they don't let it. So there are strict. You mentioned that yellow buildings.
Yes,
they are rules. They are European standard rules.
Right.
Of what you can, even if you own the building, you cannot do anything just what they say to you. Okay, strict rules. Okay, you can just paint this color. You can just paint, you cannot renovate it without their approval. How you do it, this kind of stuff. No, you cannot put advertising there on the building. So here in Austria, it's a little bit different. Even if you own a historical building, you can do whatever you like.
Yeah, there are still rules, but not maybe as severe.
Yeah, yeah, but the other thing is here in Australia there are many new buildings with blank walls, you know, nothing, just a concrete wall and nothing, just a brick wall, ugly, nothing happens, not even windows there, and this culture I'm not saying this is a bad thing, it is not. It is a modern country, you know, Australia.
Yes,
the Western history started 200 years ago here. And even if you have 200 years old buildings, but the 90% of the buildings are I don't know, built in the 20th century, and even in this more in the 21st century. And sometimes modern architects, they just design their buildings here that they include the murals in the design. So the mural painting movement has two factors. The first one is people think that it grew out of the graffiti and the street art movement. But if you think about it, many, many fine artists here in Australia found their career in the mural business, you know, because that's the business, that's the industry, sorry, not business, industry, which can give job for fine artists. Okay, so there are two different type of artists: the street artists who just go out, or graffiti artists, and do their things on their own pleasure, and the fine artists who make a living. That is our job, you know. It is, somebody has a job, I don't know, a mechanic or a soldier or a cook or a chef or whatever. I have the job, I'm an artist. We never been street artists, maybe when we were kids, but personally, myself, I never did graffiti and street art stuff because I was more interested in that classical way of art, you know, because my education was that too, although I have been educated in the area of modern and postmodern art as well, because at the university they teach you that too. But now they are recognizing, art historians recognizing street art and graffiti art as well, but not to mix it when a fine artist does street art. Okay, they are educated fine artists, and they are basically following the footsteps of the big masters from the Renaissance, Baroque, and from the art history. Because if you think about it, all the artworks in the art history, 90% of the artworks in the art history, except the 20th century, they were murals. No paintings on canvases. There were no canvases. Why? Who cares about canvases? And who cares to remove a picture of the wall and put it elsewhere? No. Even if they were on canvases, they were built in the wall, you know, with ornaments and everything. So sometimes they were on canvases, but it was because of the technical considerations, not because they wanted to remove it and put it elsewhere. All right. So it is the 20th century thing that fine art is on canvas, people think. No. And what about the rest of the art history that, I don't know, just the last 5,000 years, when the paintings were on walls all the time, outside, inside? No, we are continuing that. And that is the thing that in the 20th century, this industry, the mural industry, had been forgotten. Okay, the whole 20th century. And now it is coming back. Where? In the new world. For instance, Australia is one of the leaders in street art of the world. They still call it street art because they don't recognize it, that this is not street art. Okay, I call it street art as well, and they call me street artist. But street artist means you are walking on the street, see a wall, and you want to do something. It's not a commission or something. Why is it street art? Because I'm standing on a street while I'm painting. Okay, why don't you call the Captain Cook statue in Sydney street art? Why don't you call that street art? It's on the street. Why? Okay. No, it's not street art. It is public art. Okay, we can call this public art or mural art, but connect it to the art, to its right place. Okay, in the art history. So we are fine artists. We are continuing our job, which was the same thing 100 years ago before it got forgotten.
You make a really important point. And coming back to you are an artist, and this is your occupation.
Yes.
What is the service that you provide through being an artist? So you do this, I'm going to say street art, but you can do you can do the mural. You put that word in my mouth, the mural paintings. But do people commission you to do pictures as well?
Yes, that's why I make a living. So it is important to understand that an artist is not a special person. This is my job. That's what I do. Okay. So it is a little bit unusual compared to the other jobs, but not. As an artist, I made a living. It was very hard to make a living just simple doing artworks. All right, I did it. I got commissions, but not that many. So I was a university professor as well. So because I almost got my PhD. So before I left Europe, I almost finished my PhD, and I was writing my dissertation, and we got the visa to Australia. And okay, no, I don't care, just leave Europe and go to Australia. So I might continue it here, or I will see, I don't know.
Just saying, I can't imagine you in a classroom.
You can't imagine me?
No, I can't.
I used to be a university professor for 11 years.
Oh, wow. But I can't imagine you standing still up the front of a class.
Yeah, in front of 200 people, and I talk like you. You know, no difference. You could be 200 people, and I just talk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay.
And I'm not, it doesn't matter.
You just have a lot of energy in you, so I can't imagine you being in a lecture kind of setting.
Yeah, that's my other job. I love doing that. So I'm an art historian as well, and I'm an art historiographer as well, which means I study and overview the history of the art history writing. Okay, so that's a separated a science.
There's one thing that I've definitely got from speaking with you today is that you've got a lifetime of training and knowledge behind you, and on the brushes and in the actual art space performing that creative art.
Yes.
So you are a professional at what you do. Here in the Fraser Coast, is there anything that you would like to share with everybody?
You know, so there are two passions what I do. This is the first is the fine art. I have to create. So I always create and I have to create, otherwise I die. It is like a drug addict. Da 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 da